Hello, everyone, and welcome to NWR Connectivity, episode 373. I'm your host, John Reardon. Neil is out with a cold this week, but I have plenty of guest hosts to keep me company today. I've got Joel DeWitt.
It's a two-for-one deal.
And Alex Arona.
Hey, what's going on?
These guys, I feel like you've both been on Connectivity before. Is that true?
Yes.
This is my second time.
Okay. Okay. I was thinking that we had gotten both of you on at some point, but early on when Neil and I brought it back, we did a really good job of like hunting down everybody on staff and be like, you guys should do this. And then it got to the point where there was a long phase where it was kind of just me and Neil so that we wouldn't have to like put any effort into it. Mm-hmm. But yeah. Okay. So you guys have done this before. We're doing an okay job of having people on. So the main thing that Alex and Joel are here for is they went to Summer Game Fest. For some reason, I always want to say Summer Games Fest, but it's a singular game. I can tell you
right now that every single person at Summer Games Fest called it Summer Games Fest, and it wasn't until we had left, gotten off the plane, Xbox had already done their last showcase, and all of a sudden I saw a tweet that said, hey, wait a minute, it's Summer Game Fest. A bunch of people that were there with us were like, wait, what?
I didn't catch it until I was doing the thumbnails for a couple of the video interviews that you guys did and threw the Summer Game Fest logo on there and was like, oh, that's singular. And then I saw like the hashtag for it when I went to put that in on the YouTube video was singular. And I was like, it's like some weird Mandela effect thing. That we've all been living in the Summer Games Fest universe this entire time. But yes, you guys went to that. We're going to talk about that in a little bit. First, I want to catch up with you fellas on what you've been playing recently. Alex, you have something super new. So before we get to you, we're going to go over to Joel. Joel, this is our obligatory Zelda check-in because we haven't talked to you about Zelda yet.
Yeah, I hope this is a safe space, John.
do you hate it?
No. Okay. No, not hate. And largely I'm enjoying the game. So I don't think I'm that out of lockstep. You rated it a tad higher than I would so far.
You know, my rating, I might go down like 0.5 in my rating if I were reviewing it right now.
Okay.
So like I can be talked down. You go right ahead.
Well, I'm not here to, disappoint people who have a hard set feeling on this, but so this is very much an extension of what Breath of the Wild was, right?
Yeah.
And I think you said so in your review about how if you see Breath of the Wild as sort of the beta pre-release, and then this is like full release plus extra, expansion pack type stuff going on. It's that large in scope and difference when you consider not just the mainland, but also the depths.
Yeah.
Which for my money, that's probably the best part of the game. I think lot of the dark exploration, having to be a little more survivalist down there and making sure you've got all your equipment and materials down there so you can subsist and last. And there's just a lot of that mystery down there. Whereas my experience on the mainland was they've definitely changed up a lot of things there to where it feels not completely the same, but you relatively know that landscape. Like the mystery is not there anymore as much.
Yeah, I was surprised by how fresh it felt. But yes, I do. What I'm finding is that in Tears of the Kingdom, I am not aggressively exploring the overworld like I did in Breath of the Wild, because even though it's different, I feel like I've done it before.
Mm-hmm.
I did find that I had moments where I was like, I haven't been back to this place or that place, like not like towns, but just random kind of landmarks. I should go see if those are any different. And like they're a little bit different, but nothing huge. And I agree that the depths is where I'm like, okay, this is the new game. This is where I'm having fun. And they're also very creepy and unsettling.
They really are. Anytime you see those multiple hands reaching out at you, you just get that terror.
Because
90% of the time, I don't make it.
Yeah.
It's really, really perilous. And I have not been great at seeking out like the gloom resistance equipment or stuff like that. I was pretty proud to find the light up armor.
And that was that's nice. Handy.
That's a nice crutch to have, especially if you're not wanting to spend a bunch of bright bloom seeds. Is that what they're called? Yeah. Or arrows, which, truth be told, if you do a couple rounds of resource gathering in certain spots, you learn where that stuff's at. You can build up your reserve pretty quick. It's not a tough grind to get more of that stuff. What I was been surprised so far is that I haven't been all that enamored with the Sky Islands.
Yeah.
So my experience was that I expected it to be a little more broad lands to be traveling around. Like you think about Legend of Zelda Skyward Sword, and like that was a pretty constrained sky area. And this feels like each region has like little bits and pieces of that rather than actual like larger places to explore and discover, right? And a lot of those areas also feel like we got these handful of islands, but you're really just here to solve this puzzle, find this shrine, find this Zonai dispenser. You know, it feels very one-off mission like.
Yeah, it doesn't have, well, and they bait and switch you a little bit with the, like, that opening Sky Island that you start on is huge. And so it's, if there were more islands like that in the sky, I think it would be way more compelling. But you're right, it's a lot of, they're not uninteresting, but like there's not, you don't really explore them. You just sort of land on them and you've seen everything that is there.
Right. And like there are some cool puzzles. There's that one where it's the rotating sphere inside and you have to find a way to glide out your glider and tilt the right way to latch. I forget what I collected there, but it definitely took a lot of reloading a save to try to get it just right. And that's the stuff where when things click in this game, especially with the building components, it feels great, you know. But my experiences of feeling that way haven't been as often as I think a lot of other people that play this game do. So if I were to boil down sort of my gripe or ding against the Tears of the Kingdom, it'd be that this feels more like a fun sandbox than what I was hoping it'd be.
Yeah, I agree to the extent, and I, you know, I'll say I very much, it's a very fun sandbox.
Yes.
But yeah, I would agree to the extent of, like, I think the main thing for me, you know, there's like new exploration, but then also I found like the actual like plot was very lacking. And yeah, like that element of it, it, because it's built on Breath of the Wild, it almost doesn't have the grandioseness of Breath of the Wild inherently, just because, yeah, I mean, like you were saying about the overworld, like you can kind of only have that once. So this definitely, it feels like Breath of the Wild, but better to me, but it doesn't feel like something entirely different.
Yeah, and that's a fair way to characterize it. I think the gap in what I wanted versus what we got is that I would have loved a much newer world entirely on this, and maybe a little bit more conservative incremental changes to the actual tools and abilities you get. The building stuff, it's a technical marvel, and I'm in awe every time that somebody sends me a Twitter or a TikTok with the kind of batshit things that they come up with, you know, like mobilized drone strikes and Gundams and threshers to harvest bokoblins, like the front of a combine. It's just crazy. But when it comes to puzzle solving, and especially I feel this way about the dungeons, it's like this multi-tool is a neat thing and you can do lots of crazy stuff, but in some ways I kind of like the restrictions of having to use a ability, or if it's a multi-faceted problem, have to sort of daisy chain the abilities to step level solving the problem, you know. And so I think that's my gap with it, structurally. I think the weapon building idea is I've grown to it. I didn't like it when I first started, but as I've gotten comfortable with experimenting with that, you can really get big, powerful, destructive stuff. So many things you can attach and do like weird status effects, or you put the right kind of piece on your sword, it'll turn into a lightning rod, all sorts of cool stuff like that. And
how do you guys feel now that this is the format, like as they had stated before, this is the format for Zelda's going forward? Like, do you think that, like, while that's a fine format, they just can't do this map again? Or is there more to it than that, that actually now in retrospect seems like a bad choice?
I think it'll be interesting to see what this format looks like with a new map. Like, it definitely felt like, I feel like there's a middle ground between Breath of the Wild and, you know, the Link to the Past format that we've been following forever. I think they got a little bit closer to it in this one, where, like, I still don't think the dungeons are great, but they're, like, way more compelling than I found the dungeons in Breath of the Wild. So I'd be interested to see what they can do with, like, a new map based on what they've learned. Like I feel like in this one we saw a bunch of new mechanics based on what they learned from Breath of the Wild, and I think if we got to one where it's like, okay, now let's get a new map based on what we learned from Breath of the Wild, I think there is potential there. We'll have to see what happens. I would also be fine with, like, you know, if this is mainline Zelda, great, but, like, and I think I've said this on a previous episode, like, give, you know, Gunfire Games or Airship Syndicate or something, give them a traditional 3D Zelda to make as a side project. Like, you know, kind of like I still want there to be 2D Zelda, I also still want there to be traditional 3D Zelda. I feel like there's room for that.
Oh, so kind of like how Mario is now, having like a 2D Mario.
Yeah.
Having a 3D Mario, and then also just these kind of like weird offshoots.
Yeah, I think there's plenty of, well, and I think based on the sales of the last two Zelda games, I think it should be very clear to Nintendo that, like, there's desire for Zelda, and even like Skyward Sword and Link's Awakening Remastered, like, those did very well. And I think that shows that not only is there a desire for Zelda, there's also still desire for classic Zelda, that's kind of been reinvigorated by the Breath of the Wild games. So I hope that, my ideal is that we get all three. That's, and especially if we're going to have a 6-year dev time on everyone, then having a few to kind of like sprinkle in the middle, that would be great.
I think for me, this is sort of just a personal wish list thing, but beyond even just the new map, I would like to see them integrate the different power-ups or equipment in a way that is reminiscent of old Zeldas. You know, give us a dungeon that specifically has the hookshot, that you need to have the hookshot to beat that dungeon, but then allow it to be used in the open world in the same way. I know that would probably force a tad bit of linearity, possibly, but I don't know. They sort of break it up that way with the dungeons now and the sage's powers, right?
Yes.
With their special stones. But yeah, special stones. I would have thought they would have been able to come up with a better name.
That's the localization on that is a little awkward. Something weird about everybody talking about their special stones.
Mm-hmm.
Ganondorf's coming to steal all our special stones.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, overall, my complaints are relatively minor. Like, I've still put probably the most hours I put in a game since Breath of the Wild came out.
Sure.
And so it's hard for me to bash it too much, but it's just those little nagging things that sort of chip away at what I liked about Breath of the Wild most. And one of the big takeaways for me is, like, I'm actually learning some of the fundamental battle systems and ways to use equipment that I hadn't in Breath of the Wild. So my mind's like, well, maybe when I go back to Breath of the Wild,
I can learn these lessons.
Yeah, exactly. And dive in deeper to that. But
it's going to be weird to go back to Breath of the Wild. Like, I just did Breath of the Wild before Tears of the Kingdom again. It'll be weird to go back to it now. Mm-hmm. Like, just being like, oh, there should be a cave here. There should be a giant hole to the depths here.
Yeah.
It's going to feel very strange going back.
I actually know a surprisingly large number of people who've kind of gone that way a little bit, where they've started, the longer they've played, the further they've kind of like fallen into like a little bit of like, okay, this isn't as good as I would have wanted. But at the same time, you know, one of my friends, it was like, Breath of the Wild, I'm kind of over it. I'm not going to beat it. Tears of the Kingdom. And I was like, oh, that's crazy. I mean, what was wrong with it? He goes, nothing. I'm over it, man. I put 120 hours into it. Damn.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah,
so, it's if you put 120 hours of it, you obviously did enjoy it quite a bit, you know?
Yeah. Depending on what you're going, you know, are you going into it to roll credits or are you just going into it as a sandbox?
And that's what I'm like realizing is that like people really like the sandbox, and like I feel like it's like one of those things that like, oh, if there were like PlayStation style trophies, the number of people who actually rolled credits would get like that trophy would be much less.
That would
like,
be a very rare trophy. Any final thoughts on Tears of the Kingdom, Joel?
7 out of 10.
Ooh. Oof. I dig it. I think we would have got murdered if we went any lower than 9.5. I am proud that when I posted my review, it dropped the Metacritic score slightly. that made me happy.
I have power.
Yeah. Look at me go. Oh, man. Yeah. I think there was a 6, I believe, on the original review and people are on the like when the Metacritic reviews first went up and people lost their minds on that poor person.
You know, I feel like since I've been following this stuff, John, there's always a tad bit of Zelda groupthink when a new game comes out.
Yes.
I'm not sure if it's just like the frothing at the mouth anticipation of the new one and it being, you know, a fresh revival of a series people love, but then sort of the bloom comes off the rose a little bit over time.
Oh yeah.
When people get a chance to really sit with it.
Well, there are always like reviews where there are some reviews where I get done, like with Zelda, where like if I were to review that again right now, you know, a month later, I might go a 9 as opposed to a 9.5. It wouldn't be a huge difference, but it might go slightly lower. And then there are other games where, you know, I gave them an 8 and I look back at them now and I'm like, man, I'm still playing that game. Why did I give it an 8? Like that's clearly that was better.
I don't know. There's some strong 8s out there.
There's some strong 8s and 7s out there that I'm I've been playing this for way too long.
Yep, I've said for years that most of my favorite games are 7.5s. That is just the best score. It means they tried something and it didn't always work, but it was a cool idea. That's usually what a 7.5 means.
So what's your favorite 7.5?
My favorite 7.5?
Yep.
Oh no.
I have 2.
I don't know. Well, I think it's the entire Star Fox series.
Oh,
okay.
Yeah.
If that counts. My most recent 7.5 is Last Hero of Nostalgaea, which I just posted the review for today. That is a great 7.5. Pac-Man World, fantastic 7.5.
Yep, that's fair.
Yeah.
Warframe.
I played that once when it hit Switch, purely because it was a panic button port.
No, it was good. It was very good. But it's
a good port.
Like, it's just one of those games that's like, yeah, there's not a whole lot. Like you're doing the same thing over and over again, but you're like, you know, I could do this for, you know, 80 hours and be fine.
If that loop is fun, then absolutely. Yeah. Speaking of doing things for many hours, Alex, you've been playing like an actual brand new game. That's not on Nintendo or Xbox. It's on this strange thing that we never talk about on connectivity called a PlayStation.
Sony really kind of like coming out of nowhere in the gaming sphere.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Noted third place contender, Sony.
Yeah. I mean, who's competing with Nintendo? My vote is no one.
Yeah. I believe that's what the FTC thinks too.
I'm playing Final Fantasy 16. I'm a huge, you know, Final Fantasy person since I was a kid. I've beaten them all roughly except for the Final Fantasy 10, which I did not beat out of spite. I did not enjoy that game, so I got to the end where it says, "Hey, do you want to fight the final boss?" and I said, "Nope."
Wow.
And then I never played it again. But the I just didn't like any of the characters. I didn't like any of them. I didn't like the voice acting. It was a lot of,
are you talking about Final Fantasy X again?
Yes, I am. I'm always talking about Final Fantasy X.
Is this a regular issue with Alex? Does he get on
Final Fantasy X and then snapping his Final Fantasy Tactics disc in half?
Oh yeah.
Do you not like Final Fantasy Tactics?
Oh, I love Final Fantasy Tactics, but it's like, you know, some of those battles are like 3 hours long and then you lose and you're just like, well, very frustrated.
Do you want to say how long ago that experience was?
I mean, it was high school. It was high school, but I did it 3 times. I bought that game 4 times.
You should talk to somebody.
I have gotten better about my gaming anger. I have since gotten better. But so Final Fantasy 16 is it's the new game that's kind of coming out from the team that did Final Fantasy 14, the MMO that everyone really loves, and I've played that too. And it's very the combat's very Devil May Cry-y hack and slash with some really good dodges, and you get your basic attacks, your parries, a spell on one button, and then you get like these like different like holding the right trigger, you get like they call them the summon system here is called icons.
Okay,
and the icons you equip. And you get like certain abilities, like the first one you get is Phoenix, and you get like a fire uppercut, and then you get a fire, whirlwind slash, and they have a cooldown. And those you can like bring out in the middle of your combo, different stuff like that. It's pretty fun, and you get more. I haven't gotten the second icon yet, but you're getting multiples that give you different abilities that you can like combo together. And I just want to tell you, if you haven't played that demo, it is very Game of Thrones in a way that's very visceral.
I've heard that from a lot of people, like weirdly, yes. like people who do not talk to each other or like read the same outlets consistently. I hear that from them.
It's like, have you seen the first season of Game of Thrones?
I've seen all the seasons of Game of Thrones.
Okay. But if you know the first season, it's kind of beat for beat within the first 3 hours.
Oh, okay.
Like really close, you know? And again, it's just like, it's just one of those games. They're like, okay, I'm protector of this guy who's soon to be king, his little kid. And like, oh, some people are going to sneak in and try to attack us. Oh wait, they're slitting throats and like murdering people. It's like, oh, this is very graphic. You know, it's just very surprising how quickly they're just like murdering people. And then just like, no, it's a fight between these two summons. And it's really cool that they're fighting. But then all of a sudden, one of them like starts beating the other one and like blood starts shooting everywhere. And it's like, oh, whoa, this is very, it started to make me like very uncomfortable. I was like, okay, this is very intense, more intense than I would have thought for a Final Fantasy.
Yeah.
It's a really gratuitous.
Yeah, but it also does like a lot of like the good tropes where like the one of the first like enemies your castle's under siege and you're trying to help your family and friends, and all of a sudden like they pan up to the top of the castle and you see standing on one spike is a dragoon with a spear and you're like, oh, that's so cool. So it does hit a lot of like the mark, you know. You have chocobos and different creatures. You fight a Marlboro, but you know it's good.
Does it feel like Final Fantasy to you?
No, but I mean, well, yes and no. You have to, as somebody who's played them all, yes, but that's because you have to follow the evolution of what Final Fantasy has been becoming over the last mm-hmm. 6 years.
Mm-hmm.
Final Fantasy 13 was super linear. It was just like a straight hallway through 90% of it.
Yep.
Then you throw in 15 that was action based. And with that, you saw like the main problem with 15 out of the combat was the fact that like any magic was just area effect explosions and it hurt everybody, including you. So at a certain point, you just stop using magic.
Mm-hmm.
And then Final Fantasy VII Remake is the same thing, but they learned their lessons about magic and combat and linearity. So now with this one, they've kind of gone back to mostly linear, but it's like if you've done the very heavy action combat with parries and spells on a single button and doing special abilities here and there on cooldowns, then I mean, this is not a surprise that this is where it's went.
Yeah.
So the combat itself, does it feel fresh enough or different enough from, say, Remake, or does it feel like just sort of a natural iterative change?
It's the iterative change. It's really not anything special. And that was the other thing about Final Fantasy VII Remake, is for those who haven't played Final Fantasy 15, like you felt like the same thing in Remake. You're like, oh, this is just Final Fantasy 15, but now the spells are actually good. Okay, now I get that. You know, so that's all kind of been a consistent iterative change.
Cool.
Yeah, so I'm enjoying it so far, especially considering that, yeah, big fan since I was a kid, and I'm really glad that they do it this way. They've also thrown like little just touches here and there, like you go on the menu screen and all your characters are like made up as like little pixel Final Fantasy VI SNES characters.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, little touches here and there that like just little love letters, but for the most part, it's just like action heavy, beat for beat Game of Thrones in a way that's like kind of cool, but also kind of like, well, I mean, yeah, Game of Thrones is good. Sure. Okay.
Yeah. Hopefully it has just as flawless an ending as Game of Thrones did.
And one can hope. My understanding, it's shorter. Like, how many episodes was Game of Thrones?
Several. It was 8 seasons. I don't remember how many episodes were in each season.
But you got to imagine that, like, that's more content than 40 hours, right?
Yes, definitely more than 40 hours.
And this is roughly 40 hours.
Okay. That's I like that we're hitting a point where, like, we can have RPGs that don't need to be... As a person who plays Xenoblade extensively, I like the idea of RPGs that aren't hundreds of hours long.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no, that's where I'm at as well. I don't know. You ever played Jakmove?
No.
Jakmove, it's a turn-based RPG that's, what, 7 hours?
That's great. Yeah, I saw our review of that.
It gets in and gets out. And that's where I'm like, you know what? Yes. Okay. Every boss felt meaningful. It felt difficult. And then by the end, it never really got super overpowered. I just like barely squeaked by and I was like, I feel good. Okay.
Yeah.
Done.
Yeah. Yeah. Make shorter games, everybody. Except you, Monolith. You can keep making 100-hour Xenoblade games because, like, I'll still play through them in a week. But, you know, whatever.
I still want to play that other one. What was that? What was that other one? There was the one that came out. The one that came out last. Chained Echoes.
Oh, I've heard that's great.
Yes, that one. I'm also told is like 15 to 20.
Yeah.
So one's on my list.
Speaking of largely indies, let's talk some Summer Game Fest. It's Jeff Keighley's attempt to kind of replace E3. I don't think it's quite there, but for the first time this year, we actually got invited to go, and Joel and Alex went for NWR. Guys, tell me about this event. Have you guys been to other, like, have you guys ever done like a PAX or any other like big gaming events?
No.
Not here. No, not me.
Okay. So this is a fresh experience for you. What was it like? What'd you see? What'd you do?
So it was very, and from what I'm told, because we did like ask around a lot of people with experience, and they said that this was actually a better experience than, say, the E3s. I will say that. It was set up like a little mini college campus, where you kind of go into this weird alley that you're surprised that you're going into, but it was an alley that was between these like four buildings, and each building had kind of a different company. Maybe it was more than that, but they had, you know, probably five buildings. Maybe it wasn't many, and each one had a company. There was a Squaresoft building, and then there was an EA building, and then an indie booth building. So you kind of really just went from place to place exploring and getting, you know, just trying to figure out what is each company bringing to the table. And it was really nice, just because, yeah, you're walking 15 feet between, sure, between rooms, just like, okay, I'm gonna go here to this next building, go here to this other building. Okay, cool, our appointment's in 10 minutes, let's go walk.
Yeah, I appreciate how condensed it all was, because if you've heard enough stories about E3, I know it's at a big convention center. You hear about massive lines to wait to even try games and dealing with crowds. This was a lot more low key. The size and scope helped a lot, not only for us for our first time doing one of these, made it a lot easier to find people that we needed to meet for appointments, and that we could bounce back and forth so quickly meant we were able to really squeeze in a lot of appointments, and even we picked up a few on site there that we thought we weren't going to get to. Right.
Oh, awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. I want to say some of the Pop Agenda stuff we sort of were able to tack onto in the last minute. And then we got to try some Annapurna games as well. So, yeah, it's a really great experience. One of the things that struck me is like just how passionate the people behind the games are when you actually get to speak with them.
Oh, yeah. Like the developers.
Right.
Yeah.
I was especially surprised with Disney's Illusion Island. The Lala Studios, the person we spoke with there, couldn't say enough about his game and the passion he has for Disney and how much he's played all the Disney games and how that translated into part of how they made the game. And seeing that enthusiasm and confidence in their product help really be a highlight of that experience. It not only was it a very good playing game, but being able to talk to somebody actually working on it that can speak in depth to it was a really awesome experience.
And then you also get the hidden meanings behind stuff. You get a lot of like, oh, my inspiration was this. You really do get like these, the hands-on one-on-one. And that Disney game, it was 0% on my radar. I knew about it.
Yes.
Yeah. I was not interested. And boy, just seeing all the little nuances, the little pieces that he was kind of showing off. He's like, well, if you look here, the animation's done a little bit differently. This is all orchestrated. Just hearing how they were kind of given pretty close to carte blanche for like how their character design, which is all unique, not based off of any other known property. It just really stood out to me as like, oh, okay, so there really is a lot to it. And the ideas behind it, how they made it, how they developed it. It was like, oh, this was our mindset. We want players to do this, do that. And I could feel it when I was playing it. So it really sold it for me.
Yeah, that interview, because you guys, sent that for us to upload to YouTube and everything. I think that interview had the same effect on a bunch of the staff that wasn't there as well. I watched it. I was like, oh, this, like, I was not interested in this game, but like, hearing this guy pitch his family friendly Mickeyvania, as he called it, I'm actually pretty interested in this. And I like told Neil, and Neil watched it, and he's like, oh, I think I want to play that. So yeah, no, that was a great. I would agree that game went from just like was aware of it, not interested, to like suddenly, oh, that actually looks like it might be pretty cool. It almost the vibe of it almost made me think of like the Rayman games or something. Something about the movement reminded me of Rayman from what I could see. Obviously, I don't know if hands-on, I haven't played it, but that's what it looked like.
It's the expressiveness, right? Because all those characters, they have their unique expressions and reactions to theme, even though functionally they all play the same way. I don't think there's any actual material changes to their movement or toolkit. But it's... Oh, that was such a good game. my wife had been talking about getting it for a while, and I was like, well, luckily for you, I get to actually try it. And, lo and behold, we'll definitely be picking this up day one.
But now, did you guys play that? Did you play it in a situation where you're playing like four player?
It was three players. So it was us two and the developer playing together. And that was part of what probably helped a lot is the way he was able to sort of step through the different, like, these are the abilities you're going to have, and then actually go through the sequences and talk through it. Definitely, that was one of the things that I wasn't quite aware of, is how much some of these representatives will be there to actually, like, step you through the process of playing their demo or trying to teach up real quick. Had a similar experience with Fae Farm. With Fae Farm, Alex got dropped into a chair, and it started right off the bat with, this is your character. These are their attributes and abilities. Now we're going to do this. Now we're going to have you go to the dungeon. Very partitioned out to try to make sure you did as much as the experience as you can.
That's something that I didn't realize until I started, had actually covered some events, was like, whenever you watch a YouTube video of like press playing a game at an event, you always have the thought, I was like, man, the press are just horrible at these games. What you never get to see is that press person walked up to this demo, which starts in the middle of the game. Mm-hmm. They've never seen the game before.
Absolutely.
They're handed a controller, and a guy yells in their ear in the middle of a loud room about what to do. And they're just going, okay. And they have no idea how to play. And then everybody on YouTube is like, this guy sucks.
Yeah, and that's exactly what it was. There was a couple of games where I was like, wait, what are we doing? Okay.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, by the way, we're going to skip past this part. Just skip past this. Don't even look at it. Okay. Next. Yep. Okay. I'm like, oh, okay. Got it. And you're really given what, 30 minutes in most cases, Joel?
We were given, for most games, it was a 30 minute time slot. I think a couple of games, they split it up between two. So I think, for example, we had Little Kitty Big City and another Crab's Treasure in a half hour time slot. And then another one was, oh gosh, what was it? Haunty and
Henry Halfhead.
Yeah, those were both 15 minute pieces of a slot. So it really just depended. I mean, you go to the MK1s and they take up every bit of time that, you know, they schedule. Like, that one was interesting because they did a actual video presentation beforehand in like a small theater type room where they had representatives sort of scripted talking with this video.
The video would play and he goes, now we're going to see this. And then the people like in the video would do the thing and he goes, wow, that sure was crazy. It was a little silly. But, you know, I like the fact that they were trying to do a little like acting. It's like, yeah, and that's going to be part of it. Isn't that cool? Like trying to hype up the crowd of people who are just like, okay.
So somebody's performance management. That was part of their yearly review about how successfully they pulled that off.
Right.
And then I will say that the one of the ones that kind of stood out to me was another Crab's Treasure.
I'm very interested. I like Souls likes, so I am interested in Crab Souls like.
And this is it's a little bit more on the, you know, a little bit more accessible side. And so there's a lot of mechanics that are, it's basically you're a crab, but they're doing a lot of tongue in cheek, like a little bit with like, you're, instead of souls, you're getting microplastics and you're picking up garbage and those act as shells, which give you both a spell, but also have different durability. So your parries and blocks, they will only last a certain length of time before the shell just shatters. So like a can will be much tougher and sturdier than say a shot glass. Mm-hmm. But also on top of that, everything is just like on the ground ready to go. So you'll like go into a boss fight and you'll see like four different shells already for you to like pick out if case yours is destroyed. So it's a very on the fly thing. But then again, one of the big things about these little events is that you get the developer, and the developer was with us as we were playing. And one of the things they go, let's show you the accessibility options. Here is where you can make it so that enemies take more damage. This is where your shell takes less damage. And here, and then like as I'm going through it, I'm like, oh, you're like, wait a minute. The last on off switch is just give crab gun. And he's like, I don't know if you want to see that. And I'm like, I definitely want to see that.
Yeah, you can't just put that there and not have me click it.
Yeah, and so your crab gets a full human sized photorealistic gun. And so it's like it's human size. It is, your crab is very tiny comparative to a giant gun, and it one shots every enemy.
Nice. See, accessibility can be fun.
Yeah, they definitely made it a lot of fun, and that was hilarious to me. But then just the design of these bosses, you're fighting what feels like a samurai, a giant samurai crab on a pirate ship. Mm-hmm. And he's got his bosses have two phases in most cases. And in this case, he was trying to hit you with he took unsleeved a pair of chopsticks and they're still connected. And he's slamming it around trying to attack you. And then phase two, he snaps the chopsticks apart. And it's like, oh, that's a cool idea.
Yeah,
man, I never would have thought of that. And now he's got two weapons instead of one that he's slamming around. That's real cool. So stuff like that. I was like, okay, another Crab's Treasure is one that's like, oh yeah, that's a very cool idea.
Yeah. Yeah. That I'm super, super excited for that game. You guys, looks like you got to try out the Sonic Superstars, the new 2D Sonic game.
Yes.
Yes, we did.
Do either of you like 2D Sonic?
Yes.
Well, that's a key question before we go any further in discussing.
I stopped at Sonic CD. I stopped liking him at Sonic CD. And
okay,
Sonic
so it's been a second then for you.
I mean, I like Sonic Mania.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, with Sonic Mania in mind, I guess, how's Sonic Superstars?
It's not Sonic Mania.
Okay.
Joel, go ahead.
It's not Sonic the Hedgehog 4.
Okay.
It's probably it's somewhere better than in Sonic between. Yeah.
Right.
I know that's a wide window, isn't it?
It's somewhere between bad and good. That's the range that we're dealing with.
So I think most Sonic fans, if I'm going to appoint myself in that position, the feel of Sonic's movement is a huge part of what makes a good or bad 2D Sonic. And I think it hews pretty closely to what you would hope for or expect from Sonic's movement. That said, there are certain pieces of the level that slow you down from the outset that I'm not quite sure I like. So one is, you saw those sort of like half pipe wall walking segments in the trailer, right?
Yes.
Doesn't matter how fast you're going, it'll just grind you down to the slow walk as you're going up and down it. And that cutting off of momentum is always something that sort of grates me personally. Another part of it is that you have special abilities based off of picking up the Chaos Emeralds. So you complete this sort of Spider-Man swinging bonus stage, get the Emerald, and then there's associated power-up with it. One of the examples they gave us was one in which they're able to climb up the waterfall with a water ability. And that just does sort of the same thing. It slows things down. It's nice. It adds a bit of verticality, but you know, you usually want the levers and springs to make you go fast in some of these, right? Because those older Sonic games, what they were always about was that the early levels, they're going to be the ones where you're really zooming past everything, and then they start building the obstacles towards you being able to run through most of the level as it gets harder, right?
Right.
And it feels like, while it doesn't make it harder, some of those stop signs are a little bit too early in the game from what I played.
Well, and it sounds like they're unavoidable, you know, like it's one thing if like, oh, there's a rock here that you need to jump over. But if it's like, yeah, to go through this part of the level, we are going to force you to go slow, feels very counter to the point of Sonic the Hedgehog.
They have these in the game, in all the Sonic games, they will have these like little like spinning wheels that are there to like make you go faster. Like you'll get on them and it'll like supercharge you faster. And it felt like in all of the levels here, they had a bunch of them. And that's kind of one of the key signs of like, oh, wait, Sonic isn't built to go fast.
Oh, like they're having to manually speed him up.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. And that's where I was like, oh, OK, that might be a warning sign for me. Is that like, oh, I'm trying to go fast. And of course, they're like, why don't you stop and go to a waterfall and swim up? And I'm like, but I want to go fast.
But I simply gotta.
Yeah. And it's not a problem per se. It's just like that. It's just interesting that like this is the Sonic game. And they're like, well, you should probably explore the level. And it's like, do I?
Yeah.
I mean, or do I got to go? You know, oh, I don't have to go. I'm supposed to explore the level. Okay. It feels counterintuitive in a way that like, it's not a problem per se. It just feels counterintuitive for this game.
Yeah. I think my gripe with that kind of establishment is that part of what's really fun about Sonic is building the momentum to speed and then trying to maintain that speed as you go along. Some of those, you know, flipped switches and speed up dials, they're fun in small doses, but when it gets overburdened with it all along like that, it almost feels like, well, we didn't necessarily design this thing with keeping Sonic moving fastly in mind, so we'll sort of insert this stuff to force it through, right?
Yeah.
But as much as it sounds like I'm dunking on this game, it's actually fun enough. It's just not, if you're an old 2D Sonic fan like us, I don't think it's going to be the next Sonic Mania. You're going to have to accept it for what it is. And
yeah,
we did not get to try multiplayer, which is probably my biggest disappointment since it was such a big featured thing on the trailer, right?
Yes. Yeah. And that'll be... I'm trying to remember, even the trailer didn't show like split screen or anything. But I feel like in a game where you're going fast, you almost like that was always the awkward thing in Sonic 2 was when Tails falls behind and then he just kind of like has to teleport up to you. Like, I feel like it would have to be a split screen or something to make that work.
I'm just imagining it being like Super Mario, New Super Mario Bros.
Well, yeah,
it'll sort of stunt you in the back end if people are dragging.
Yeah.
But the other part is that maybe this is like, that's why you have to slow down. Maybe that's what their plan is. It's like, we don't want it to be a fast game. And it's like, why would you name it Sonic?
But so there.
So maybe that's the case. Like, maybe it's like, oh, we want it to be more cooperative focused. You take your time, you explore the multi different levels and ways you can explore a single level. And it's like, oh, that's cool. That's a good idea. I just, that's not my gut instinct.
Yeah. It's like they're making a new Super Mario Bros. Game. They just put Sonic in it. Interesting.
But I mean, like, the powers are cool. Like, one of the powers we saw besides the waterfall one was that you can just fill the screen with copies of yourself. So you just, your whole screen is filled with your copies, and then you end up getting like, you just, they all just attack at the same time. It's a very like visually appealing like thing to happen.
Yeah, it almost reminds me of like, what was it, Sonic Colors that I think started doing a lot of this stuff with power-ups in 3D Sonic. It feels like they're kind of trying to work some of that into the 2D stuff. I don't remember if they've done much of that in 2D before or not.
Not that I can remember.
Yeah.
And then the bonus levels are interesting. They bring back the Sonic 1 bonus level. There's a new one now where you're like grappling hooking from point to point to try to get an emerald for a new power up, stuff like that. There's a lot of bonus levels, it seems like, right? I think we saw 3 of them, right? 3 different bonus levels.
Yeah, it almost, this is an everything in the kitchen sink kind of approach to 2D platforming. And that's what it felt like, is that they had a lot of ideas they liked and had trouble cutting any out.
Yeah.
I will say it's a beautiful looking game. You know, I think the trailer didn't do it any justice with trying to directly compare it to old 2D Sonic, both from the speed sense, but then also, I don't know about you, but I don't always love my 2D platformers with a 3D rendered character. I think sometimes it has too much of that like shine that makes it feel undefined. And looking up close in this game, you can see the details and all the characters. They're all very expressive in the kind of way you'd want, not as much as Mario in Wonder, but still very, very good. So I think it's going to be a very nice looking game, and then it's just going to be, your miles may vary about the kind of platformer you want.
Yeah, I assume you guys were playing on probably a PC build,
that or a PS5.
I believe it was PS5.
Okay, I was gonna say, I'm assuming they weren't demoing on the Switch. The little bit I've seen of the Switch version looks, we'll see. It did not look as pretty as the trailer did. From what I saw the Switch build,
I will say that we were given a warning that it was still a work in progress, and they were aware of any kind of like limit, like current frame rate or limitation issues that they were experiencing.
Sure,
and that would make it like, so they're probably, so all of our stuff that we're saying right now, oh, this was kind of a complaint, is also possibly a moot point at this juncture.
Hopefully, yeah.
Well, speaking of Switch, though, we did get our hands on. Escape Academy for Switch.
I love Escape Academy.
Me too.
So it's much.
Yeah.
How does it run on Switch?
It does the job that it needs to.
Okay.
Yeah.
Like it's not getting, you know, heavy like what, 60 frames per second, but it is like, okay, this is very tangible. This like, but that game's not really graphically intensive, so it's like, what do you expect from it? It's like, oh, okay, it works.
Yeah. Right, it, the frame rate's consistent, which is my biggest concern about a game like that. It's not like it's precision, but given that you have time limits that you're trying to work around and solve puzzles around this area, in this case, one of the DLCs that's coming out is an old-fashioned like 50s diner, and the level they had us play on the big boy machine was that the diner, it's like going back in time to the professors being younger, and you're feeding them from a diner for some reason, and finding all the ingredients and going through making them courses of a meal. So the level, it's the kind of stuff you'd expect with more Escape Academy. That DLC will be included in the Switch final version. It's going to be
the full like Game of the Year edition.
Yeah, they're calling it the complete edition or complete version, something like that. But the actual system operations, it's consistent frame rate. It's probably closer to 30 than anything, but that's, to me, that's good enough.
Yeah.
I mean, you're going to see a little bit less clarity in the visuals, where it's not that you can't see things. It's just that it doesn't have quite the same amount of like layering or texture on some pieces of the environment, but nothing was tough to suss out. Like, you could still see where the clues were. Didn't really have any trouble with navigation. It is a game that I could totally see myself playing handheld if given the opportunity. And I think that's the big piece of it, is this going to be something you want to play in your hands?
Just knock out a quick escape room while I'm like, you know, I'm just waiting in line somewhere. I'm just going to knock this out real quick. You know, I'm at the DMV for an hour. Let's just escape room it up.
Right. Were you playing split screen or just single player?
It was single player on the Switch. They didn't give us the opportunity for split screen while playing that.
But on the PC, we definitely played split screen, and that was fun.
Okay.
On the DLC.
Okay. Yeah, I'll be interested to see how split screen holds up on the Switch, because that would obviously be the more demanding thing.
And we were specifically, we were on the Switch Lite.
Okay, so you were playing in handheld mode.
Yes.
Correct.
Yep. Okay. Cool.
Yeah.
That's okay. Cool. Escape Academy is one of those games that I wish I could completely forget everything about so I could play it again. I feel like it's one of those, like, I can only play that game for the first time once, and I'm kind of sad that I don't get to do that anymore because I've already played it. Very excited for the DLC to have just a little bit more Escape Academy to play.
Yeah, and that was the funnier part for me, was like, oh, okay, they're like, here, try it on the Switch Lite, and I was like, oh, great. Oh, I know this puzzle. Hold on.
Yeah, like 10 minutes. Okay, speed run it for you real quick.
Yeah,
get an A+.
I've done this a bunch of times. I know this one. So yeah, that's so I agree. It is one of those games you wish you could play more than once, because it's like, oh yeah, it's just fun. Escape rooms are fun, you know. And I actually just recently realized in just my off time that escape rooms have kind of blown up. That there's like in my area, there's like 7 places, and they each have like 6 escape rooms.
Yeah.
It's like, when did this happen? That just people just kept going to them every time. There's a lot.
Yeah.
Booming industry.
Yeah. I want to go to all the people who are discovering escape rooms and be like, have you ever played the game Myst? I think you would like it.
You know, I've played Myst. I don't think that's true.
I think it's just a giant escape. It's an escape island.
Yes. Okay. You know what? Fair. It is a giant, hard to parse, almost inescapable.
It's a very esoteric escape room.
There we go. I'll take that.
It's great. Let's see. Anything else that we should probably start wrapping up here, but anything else that you played that you guys want to highlight?
Ooh, okay. Joel, what are you feeling? You pick one, I'll pick one.
Oh, geez. You had to throw me up first, huh? Viewfinder.
Oh.
It might be the same one Alex was asking about or going to mention, but Viewfinder.
Well, he let you go first, so.
Yeah, that was, and he's the one that played it there. I didn't get to play it until they released the demo here. Viewfinder is just a wild one in that if you're familiar with something like Superliminal, where it's a puzzle game, first person, but the puzzles involve you doing things that sort of warp reality around you. It's very much in that fashion. So you'll either be picking up a photo and then you place it in the foreground, but it'll actually like slice it out of the geometry and landscape to create that picture. So it might be a hallway with a table and chair set at the end or something like that in black and white. And then you just place it and you can jump over to it and be inside that environment. And it does these things where you might reach like a gap and there will be a picture of a bridge, and you can just tilt the bridge photo in just a way to connect them together and then have a walkway through that. Or there are these parts at the end, these viewfinders, where you have to find batteries to power them up, and you might find one in a picture. Well, what you should do is take that picture, grab the battery out, put it down, and then if you wanted to, you could take a picture of the battery, pull out that second one, take a picture of the two batteries, have 4 batteries, and just really get into this weird Inception-like stuff. I also know that one of the puzzles that I solved was just me like using one of the hallways to just cut into a piece of wall, so I could walk through a gap not even related to the picture I laid down. Mm-hmm. So it offers a lot of really creative solutions to your problems that way. And there's one of the really coolest parts of that demo was that they gave you a sequence of pictures, and one of them was like a child's drawing of a house. And then you place that down and you walk in and it's just like that child's drawing of a house in 3D space. And then you find the next photo and it's color painting. And then you find the next one and you lay it down and now you're in a corridor Doom style shooter area trying to find your way out. Like the creativity just for that small slice of a demo has me really hopeful for that game.
Yeah, that's everything I've seen from that game just looks absolutely nuts. And I'm that looks very interesting. Alex, was that the game you were going to pick?
That was not the game I was going to pick. Okay. I actually wanted to say that Thirsty Suitors.
Okay.
I've been waiting on for a while. That is an Annapurna published game, Outer Loop Games, and it's an indie kind of RPG where it's if you imagine Scott Pilgrim, and you are coming in, you're returning home, you know, after like something going on with your career, and you return home, and you're like what, 25 or something like that, and you're going back, and when you go back to your hometown, you're just kind of getting bombarded by your exes. And you fight them in these giant, bombastic, almost musical turn-based, JRPG battles. And it's super fun. And from what I'm told, it is roughly like 5 hours.
Perfect.
I'm like, another short RPG. Good. Yep. And we talked to the developers, one of the persons in charge of creative, and she was really passionate about it and telling me about like a little bit more the inspirations and stuff. We got an interview with her. But just in general, I've been like, I played a demo on Steam Next Fest, I want to say last year, and I've been kind of waiting for it for a while. And now seeing it at the Summer Games Fest, and then also being like talking to them about the Switch port, like the Switch, or not the port, that it's being released day and date on Switch, stuff like that. It was very exciting. So that's what I'm looking out for.
Great. Yeah. Yeah. There is that one might have gone up today. There is a video version of that interview up on our YouTube channel, as well as I think you posted a written version, right, on the website?
I did.
Cool. Yeah. So however you prefer to consume interviews, it's available. Great. Well, with that, I think we'll call that an episode. There are plenty of other previews for games that we didn't have time to talk about here. You can check them out at NintendoWorldReport.com. Hit the little preview button at the top. Joel and Alex wrote previews for a bunch of games that they played at Summer Game Singular Fest. Yeah. Thanks for joining me, guys, and good job at your first event. You guys killed it.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you so much for this opportunity.
This episode of Connectivity is brought to you by our supporters on Patreon and by Wongo Puzzles. Are you tired of the same old boring puzzles? Mix things up with Wongo Puzzles. Each puzzle is a custom design with intricate patterns and whimsical shapes that will keep you engaged for hours. Plus, their eco-friendly materials and commitment to sustainability make Wongo Puzzles a guilt-free way to unwind. They are 100% wooden puzzles. They'll last forever. Each piece is hand-drawn, so no two pieces are the same, and you'll discover some fun, whimsy pieces as you work through it. They come in a custom wooden box, which is perfect for storage and gifting. With stunning designs and unique shapes, Wongo Puzzles are a cut above the rest. So what are you waiting for? Go to wongopuzzles.com and pick your puzzle today, and be sure to use the promo code CONNECTIVITY to get 10% off your order. This is the most fun you've had with a puzzle, guaranteed, or your money back. Go to WONGOPuzzles.com and use the code CONNECTIVITY to get 10% off your order and get puzzling right now.